Ryan Elberg, how we doing, my guy?
I'm doing better now that I'm with you, my friend.
Oh, dude, you are, first off, I know we're going to get into so much today. I'm so excited to talk to you, taking the glasses off so I can look cool.
There we go, likewise.
All these ladies at home, I'm engaged.
I haven't seen you. I texted you congratulations, but
thank
I haven't
you so
seen
much.
You since then.
Yeah,
so congratulations.
Thank you very much, my friend.
That's
I'm
very
just
exciting.
Going to adjust your levels a little bit.
Sure,
and
I got
something.
Too excited.
No, that's okay. No, it's totally my fault. It's funny because like I've had this issue where sometimes the audio comes out and it's like, Ryan Lynch is another great comedian. Go follow him on like Instagram and TikTok. He's hilarious. He gave me the advice. He was like, you need to turn down the mic. And I just have this thing in my head where I'm like, I can't turn the volume down because I'm like afraid we're going to lose everything.
Oh,
but it's like, you know what I mean? So it's always my fault. I always keep it like louder than not. But anyway, that's a long way of saying thank you for the well wishes, my friend. Yeah,
of course.
I'm super excited, dude. We're having the wedding planning conversations, which is exciting.
Nice.
And it's like we're getting into it. So it's really fun.
Where's it going to be?
So we're at like, it's hard because it's like we want to do something different. Mm-hmm. We're thinking like we'll do something in upstate New York,
okay,
which is exciting. But we don't really want to do a ceremony. And like we're thinking like, originally we were thinking like maybe we'll get married at the courthouse and invite some people up to New York State and then like in upstate New York. But like as we go through it, it's like she's like, well, I want to wear a dress. Well, are we going to do vows? So it's like slowly turning into like a real wedding.
Yes. It's I feel like with weddings, I'm not married, but everyone wants to be unconventional. And then you sort of realize that, some of the conventions are quite fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's like what I'm realizing as we're going through it, because it is like, it is nice to like get in front of everyone you know and love and to like, you know, to do that. And
right.
It's like, I was always like, wow, like, you know, when I met her too, I was like, we were both in the same boat. We were like, I'm not really sure if we're going to get married. And she was like, fine with that. But look at us now.
Yeah, there you go. Now so you're still not married.
Now I'm still not married. Brian, are you dating anybody or no?
No, not at the moment.
Oh, ladies. No. prominent bachelor here.
Yeah, there you go.
Brian, you're so goddamn funny. We just have to start with that. You've done the show here at the bookstore so many, twice, I think. You murdered every time. And you actually sent
me
one of my favorite messages I've ever gotten about this show, which is that after you came here and you did 10 minutes, no teacher jokes,
mm-hmm.
and you texted me after and you said, thank you for creating a space where like that was possible. That meant so much to me.
Oh,
man.
I'm so glad. Yeah. That's the truth, because I do most of my comedy is about my life teaching.
Sure.
Because it's a big part of my identity, certainly.
Yeah.
And it's sort of how I think about the world a lot of times is through my lens in that job, if that makes sense. And it's a lot of my comedy, but I'm trying to sort of get it out of there because there are
sure.
more facets to me than just teaching high school math.
No, of course. And I was just going to say, you do high school math, and you do algebra, geometry, and statistics, right?
Yes, sometimes AP stats, but not this year. Yeah.
Not this year. Okay, gotcha. Yeah. Do you miss teaching AP stats or no?
No, because I'm going to get to do it again next year, and I sort of, there's only room for one AP class at a time.
That makes
it's not
sense,
the most.
Yeah.
If you want to do a whole podcast about scheduling logistics of a New York City high school, we could, but that's not, I don't think that's the most interesting for the listeners at home.
No, of course, dude. No, but you're so freaking funny. You're one of the comedians, and I don't mean to butter your bread too much because I don't want to sound insincere. You're like, I am ready.
By all means. I deal with high school kids all day who do nothing but make fun of me. So to have you come butter my bread, as you put it, is wonderful.
Dude,
100%.
You're one of the comics I love seeing that like work on their act. You know what I mean? Like, in other words, like I love watching you work, and like I love seeing your jokes evolve and stuff over time, if that makes sense. And just like.
Well, like, thank you very much. I feel like that is something I don't always think that I do well, which is I think that I'm a bad tinkerer with a joke.
Oh,
I think
really?
I write a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
But if they don't work well the way that I wrote them, I often am like, all right, well,
you're like, so you don't even play with them? Like,
I want to do it. And I recognize that's the better way to do it.
Sure.
But it just isn't always, a club I have in my bag, so to speak.
Do you put any effort into like,
no.
Well, not hard no, just big stop. No, in other words, like, because one thing I've noticed with your act in particular is you'll move a lot of jokes around in like different places. Is that something you do like consciously, or is it just like I'm feeling this one here and this one there?
I would say I open with pretty similar stuff and I close with pretty similar stuff, and then I will play around a lot with what's
like
in
what's
the middle.
In the middle. That makes sense.
And I feel like to circle back to what you said a second ago. I feel like I write a lot of middle of the act stuff,
mm-hmm.
and and I'm trying to write more stuff that I would feel comfortable taking out the stalwarts, quote unquote stalwart that I have at the front and the back of it.
Gotcha.
Right, because I'm sure that they're not even as good as I build them up to be in my head, but that is sort of where I feel like I am, where I'm writing stuff and I'm like, oh, I could put that in the middle, so, but not at the beginning or the end, and that's maybe why you feel like I move stuff around because I just have. consistent cycle of mid material that, that I'm moving around the middle of the set. No, I know it's not how you meant it, but that is how I feel sometimes. Yeah.
No, of course, of course. And you have this very unique experience, which is that you're a teacher by day, stand-up comedian by night, which is fascinating to me. And we were talking a little bit about it before the podcast, but my first question is, like, take us through, like, a day, because, like, it's a very early morning for you, and it's you're out late at night, too. So are you just, like, constantly exhausted?
I'll take you through a day, which is that I don't know, like, I could do the minute-by-minute schedule of my
I would love it. Listen, I would love it. This podcast can be as long as we want.
All right, so. Great. So I wake up around 6. I try to exercise and everything before work. I get to work.
What do you do for exercise? Do you run or something?
So I used to be a big runner. Okay. I've run 12 marathons, I believe.
12 marathons? Yeah. Oh, my God.
But I haven't run one in the last... I've backed off that in the last year just because of comedy and other stuff.
That makes sense.
Because I sort of maxed out that part of my life where it was like I just didn't want to keep doing it anymore. It's a lot of time and a lot of effort.
And it's also, like, I do hear it's not great on your body as you get older.
I think
right?
that's a myth.
Is it really?
I think it is.
I mean, that's the excuse I tell myself, so I don't
think
have to do it.
I think that's, it's a myth. It's one of those facts where, like, nowadays so much information, so many, like, facts that are available, some of them true and some of them not, where I feel like we all just sort of cling to the facts that fit our narrative. And it's like, I feel like people who don't want to run often say, like, no, I heard it's bad for you. I heard it's like those people who claim that, like I once saw that eating a lot of maple syrup was very good for you. And I'm like, well, then I'll eat it every day for the rest of my life. And I won't ever check anywhere else if that was a good idea.
I will say, even with that, I can't take that out of my, I know we're trying to stop the spread of misinformation.
Yeah.
That one, I don't know if I can take out of
no,
my
by all
no.
no, by all means.
I might still spread that one. But anyway, 12 marathons. Where did you run them? In New York?
Or? Three New Yorks. I ran Boston, one in New Hampshire, one in California, another small one in Massachusetts somewhere, and then one in New Jersey, two in New Jersey, one in Pennsylvania. Yeah, so kind of all
that's
over.
That's incredible. Yeah. So anyway, so you used to run.
Yeah, so I used to run. Now I do other stuff. I do the Peloton. I do like a nice old mom style Peloton workout. Me and my girl Jen Sherman every day. Not every day, but a couple times a week. And then I lift a couple times a week too, trying to get huge. And then I get to work around 7:45, 8 o'clock, and then I'd leave work at 4. I coach the track team, so I leave around 5.
Oh, you coach the track team? That's cool.
Yes, and then I try to hit a mic or go to shows or whatever, and then I end up getting home at. So I typically will go home, and then I do a thing to kind of try to reset my day when I get home, for a few reasons. One, because I will have a second cup of coffee when I get home.
Yeah, makes sense.
And I sort of think of it as, oh, now my day starts again.
So, in other words, when you come home from school.
Right, because I don't want to think of comedy in that as a hobby. Yeah. I think of it as, like, almost a second job. So, it's like, oh, now I'm getting ready again to go out again and go to work again.
That makes sense.
Right? And so, I'll try to do that. And I am tired sometimes, but I am just sort of blessed with a lot of energy in general, which is good and bad. But
no, and that's, I mean, what's... And I struggle with that. But also, too, I am someone, like, I work from home 5 days a week. So, and I'm so fascinated by it because, for me, I think part of the reason, and I'm trying to be better about this, is that I'm so tired all the time. I'm just not physically moving because I will get up a lot of the times and, you know, I'll make coffee in the morning and I'll walk around my apartment, maybe take my dog out. But then I'll kind of just sit down at my computer and then I'll just, like, you know, sit there for 5 hours, maybe take the dog out again, come back. I have to work and, like, do whatever. And again, I'm very fortunate I get to work at home, but I do have to actively, like, you know, today I worked and I had coffee. I had a Ghost energy drink before I came here just to, like, you know, make sure I'm, like, you know, ready to do the pod and stuff. So I'm just, that is so admirable.
Well, the good news is you're not running. If you're sitting there. So that's, that is the way,
like,
best way to stay healthy, in fact.
I'm like, running's bad for you, but staying at home 12 hours a day, that's there's no problem with that.
Well, one of the reasons I got into teaching is because I got, I can't stop moving generally. I like to
really?
Be moving.
Okay.
I like to be moving a lot. I have a lot of energy, like I said. I like to be sort of doing stuff all the time. In fact, the first, we could talk, if you want to talk low points, when I studied abroad in London, and that was, it's not mentally in the best headspace that whole time. But one of the reasons was I had an internship there working for the Islington branch of the Labour Party, which is like their liberal party over there. And I literally went there the first day I have this internship. They gave me a big stack of petitions, sorry. Still in school mode. And I had to go back and look through their database and, like, I wasn't even really entering the petitions. I was making sure the petitions had been entered correctly. You know? So yeah, it was like hundreds of documents, and I'm like, all right, you know, Gerald Johnson. Okay, yep, he lives at this address. Great. And I just did that all day for like 8 hours.
Yeah, that's...
And then I literally went out and I called my dad like on the walk to the tube, and I was like...
I love that.
I was like, oh, that's what a desk job is?
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't do that ever again. Because I'd worked in high school. I was a camp counselor, and I worked at a soup kitchen, sure, actually, for as like a maintenance guy and stuff like that. And so I was just like an extra set of hands there. And so I was always had jobs where I was moving and involved with stuff. And then I had one day of a desk job, and I was like, never. I was like, I can't do that.
Yeah. See, I had that day in college as well, mm-hmm, and then I continued to work in it for 7 years. So I'm glad. I'm glad some of us got out. And
yeah.
No, it is like, it's monotonous, and it's just so much. And the hard part too is like, having worked in it for so long, a lot of it too is just so pointless. Like, I've been on jobs before in projects where it's like, we worked 8 months in a row, sometimes 12-hour days. And then,
oh my God.
But at the end of the project, like, and I used to work in a bank that used to be a funeral home, and they used to put us in the room where they kept the bodies.
Wait, which is okay, like, hold on. It was a bank, not a funeral home that used to be a bank the other way?
Wait, what did I, no. So
you
it was
a bank that used to be a funeral home?
Yeah, so it was a funeral home, then they turned it into a bank. So like a little branch of like a, you know, you would see like a city or something, yeah, like on the side of the, on the street. And we would go in and they kept us in the room where they used to keep the bodies. We would sit there for like,
this is,
hours,
I mean, this is out of like, this is like Kafka-esque. It's like, where like your soul goes to die.
Oh, I,
you know, I mean, it's a funeral for your soul every day.
I was so dead inside. I didn't even make that connection. No, I was like, so yeah, but oh my God, we would do that. And then we would leave the project. And then I remember distinctly after that project, they were like, all right, the bank got sold. So everything we did was for nothing. Dude, it was crazy. It's nuts. It's like so wasteful
and
whatever.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was. But so I'm glad you're in teaching is what I'm trying to say. And we've talked about this before too. There's like a teacher shortage right now, right?
Massive. The whole time I've been a teacher, there's a massive teacher shortage.
What is that like for you going into work? Like, are you working more like classes and stuff?
So on like a day-to-day, you don't notice it as much. But like last year, for example, we had a teacher quit in the middle of the year because he had to go deal with something with his family and something else. And like some jobs, if someone quits, you like easily hire a new person to replace them. We just couldn't find a person all year. So then last year, everyone's picking up extra classes. Some kids just had no math class last year. We just couldn't fill the void. So then you have kids this year who are like, yeah, I just didn't do that
last year. So they skipped like an entire level of math?
Right, and then some of them need to retake algebra. Some of them were able to just like pass a test at the end of the year.
Oh,
they basically
no.
said they were good enough already, but yeah.
Right, because you need those requirements to graduate from high school.
100%.
Oh my God. So so it's not like, so would they have to like double up on math the next year or something?
So some kids are doing that. Yeah, but so that's what it sort of looks like. And also it looks like if someone quits, you frequently either can't replace them or you end up replacing them with someone who like, you know, if you're a teacher like looking for a job into the new school year, that usually means, with some exceptions, it usually means you're not great.
Yeah.
So it sometimes means we have to just hire someone, like basically the first person we can get in, we end up having to hire because it's like a warm body to like be in the room and maybe try to watch kids, right?
Oh my God.
I mean, this year we got very lucky because we also had a teacher quit, but then the guy we replaced is great so far. So things like that can happen. But
now, as a teacher and stand-up comedian, mm-hmm, do you people at school know, and I know the answer to this, but people at school know that you're a comedian as well?
Yes. So everyone knows. I don't hide it. I don't have a stage name or anything like that, which is a big regret that I have.
Same here. I don't have a stage name either. I wish I did. What would your stage name be? Have you thought about it?
I have thought about it a lot. I think my stage name
Bruce
would be...
Bruce Springsteen Jr. He's a very big Bruce Springsteen fan. So.
Huge. That would be... Bruce would have been a good name.
And it's close to Brian, which
that would have been awesome. But I couldn't have done... I don't think I could have named myself after Bruce Springsteen. I feel like that would have been... I feel like if I ever get a dog, I might name my dog Bruce, but naming myself after him feels a little bit... even more so than the people who have, like, Bruce tattoos that
makes
I've seen.
But you could be the boss's son.
Yeah.
Sorry.
My dad does look a lot like Bruce Springsteen.
Get
people,
out,
so
really?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, my therapist thinks that's very interesting. But they do look alike, people say. Yeah.
You're at a Bruce concert, Dad.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a concert with my brother recently, and my brother's kids, my nieces, and my sister-in-law, and Bruce came out, and we were all just like, yeah, he looks a lot. He looks a lot like Dad.
How many times have you seen him in concert?
Probably 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
more. Yeah. It's the best. It's the closest thing I have in my life to religious experience. But
I thought you were going to say a father figure.
No, I have a great dad. My dad's wonderful. We're just on the phone on the way here.
Nice.
He was breaking new ground telling me how much he really hates Trump. It was great.
Wow, that is...
Yeah. We decided to mix up the conversation.
I like that. Yeah. Good for him. Was he a Trump supporter?
My dad? No, my dad has hated Trump since 1998.
Yeah, mine is a huge Trump supporter.
Oh, so really? Is that tough for you?
Oh, yeah, it's real. Because my older brother is so liberal that it's like... And I'm obviously liberal, too. I hate everything that's going on right now, but it's... Yeah, it's very contentious. They really, like, they go at it, and it's very...
Really?
Makes the holidays very difficult.
I can't picture you being from a Trump family.
Dude, you know what's
funny?
You're
so kind, and
I
like,
appreciate
you're, like,
that.
A kind and empathetic person, which I feel like is...
Yeah, yeah. Except for those immigrants. I just want them... No, it's obviously a joke.
Yeah.
I'm making fun of the other side, and need to make that clear. No, you know what's funny is like...
I like how you told me generously that I could clip, that I could cut anything I wanted to. What if I was like, you can only release it if you put that out as a clip of us, me just sitting in my Bartlett for America shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But this
so
is
anyways,
actually...
You were saying.
No, of course. Yeah. And this is actually... And we are going to get back to what your stage name would be, because
that's
how we got on this. But my this is actually what my solo show is about, because I grew up, and I'm actually debuting it April 4th at 7 p.m. at Symposium Bookstore here. Come out, people. I think I'm releasing this episode before then. It's the weekend before. So I grew up, I idolized my dad. I always wanted to be him and everything like that. And then without giving spoilers away, and I'll tell you off mic, something happened in my family that made me realize that I really don't want to be like him at all, and I want to be like my own person and stuff. So that's really growing up in like a Trump family. But actually, you bring up a good point, which is that like in high school, because I wanted to be like my dad so much, I would say I was a Republican, which like looking back, it was like, you know, I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking for myself. So I was like, oh, my dad's a Republican. I guess that's the right thing. So I'll just tell people I'm a Republican.
Well, those Republicans were also different than these.
That's
Republicans.
True, too.
Like, I wouldn't
say
that like kindness was like,
right,
was anti-Republican then necessarily, but now it certainly is.
Right, 100%.
Like, yeah, I mean, I certainly feel like that. But hold on, I had some. So, have you seen the Springsteen on Broadway, the show?
No. Well, Brian, I'm kind of afraid to tell you this on mic, but yes. I really only know Born to Run, and that's it.
So, no worries. I mean, the song or the
album?
Wow,
this is much better than I thought it was going to go. I thought you were going to be the first person to walk off.
So, well... Walk off by the Bruce biography that's over there. Did you put that up because I was coming in?
I did not, but that is, I didn't even notice that, but I love that you did.
That's the Peter Carlin one, I believe. That's probably the second best, of course.
Oh my God.
That's the second best biography. I believe it is.
You're like, I have my ranking of the
so
top
much,
10.
When I went to London, when I was studying abroad, I brought that book and I was nervous to go. I was very homesick as a boy. And I brought that book. I was nervous to go, even as a 21-year-old studying abroad. And I remember thinking, I'll read this book on the plane, and hopefully someone will talk to me about it. And I'll be able to...
Did they?
No, not at all. I sat next to... I went to London with my best friend, Andrew. We were roommates all 4 years of college, including there. But I was sat next to, on the plane there, a guy who, 10 seconds in, asked me if I believed in God.
Oh, no.
And then spent a lot of the flight pacing back and forth.
Stop.
And I was prepared to, like, I literally had a whole plan in my head if this guy tried to, like, hijack the plane. Because he was talking about, like, religion and God and the afterlife and was walking around a bunch. And I was like, all right, you know, today might be my day. It was a real life Mark Wahlberg. I was like, if I was here, it would have gone down different. Yeah. And I literally was prepared. I had a whole speech I was going to give. And I had a whole thing where I was going to stand up and I was going to say, like, Andrew Gilblatt is behind you. I was going to pretend I was an air marshal. Sorry. I was going to say, I'm air marshal Brian Ellberg. Air marshal Andrew Gilblatt is also on this plane. That would have been my friend's cue to stand up, and then we were going to have to fight this guy. Nothing happened. He just walked around for a while.
No, of course, but I love that.
I was prepared with my Bruce book and my speech.
That was your weapon was the Bruce book?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That is, oh my God, that's incredible. Oh my God. Well, first, because so many different emotions are going there.
Of course.
One, it's like the fear of going to that new place
and
all that. And then just like, ugh, I can't. What's so funny is like, you're like, I hope somebody talks to me. I'm like, I can't talk to anybody on a plane. I can't do it, man.
Well, I oscillate back and forth between those two things of like being very friendly. Like, I sort of want to be the guy who could talk to a stranger on a plane for hours and have like a really deep conversation.
Sure.
But then as soon as anyone says anything, I'm like, this is not what I wanted.
Yeah.
That's I just go back and forth between those. And yeah, I don't know. I wrestle with that. Those parts of my identity, I guess. But yeah.
Just on that point too, it's like there is like, because I think the reason is it takes effort, right? And it's like, because sometimes you have to like try to like keep the conversation going and things like that. But I also think like, it depends a lot on just who that other person is.
Yeah.
Because obviously sometimes, and maybe I'm not saying anything significant, but like, I think if the person is generous enough to like understand like where you're coming from and like if they don't want to talk or they do want to talk, you know what I mean? Like they're just self-aware.
Yeah.
That's such a huge thing with that too. It's just being self-aware.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think fit, like how people fit together in relationships and whatever else, and you how a person fits with their job and their life more broadly is like an underappreciated part of, like, I don't know, our life in general.
100%.
Like, I think right now I'm very well aligned. I'm a very good fit for sort of at least teaching, I would say. Like, that may not be for everyone, but for my personality, I fit really well. I think that's very true in relationships also. And I always say this with kissing. This is my one of my great theories. Some people, sometimes someone will say, oh, someone's a good kisser or bad. But I think that it's just all fit. Different people have different styles. It's how well they match up.
Yeah. And
it's
you
like
know,
the Victor Oladipo thing where he didn't play at all on the Magic. They traded him to the Thunder or something. He was an all-star the next year.
Well, 100%.
Same player, different system. Sorry to keep
going. No, that's okay. The only thing I was going to add is that I think sometimes, I love that you're bringing it up because sometimes it's not accounted for and people will like blame themselves, like especially in relationships.
Right.
Like if it doesn't work out, it doesn't necessarily have to mean that one person's bad, one person was good. Obviously, sometimes, right, that's the case. But, you know, it can just be that two people were not a fit and they brought out the best or the worst in each other. And that's just what it is.
Yeah.
All right, your stage name, and then we're going
to... Oh, fair enough. Oh, so I had one more. Let me work backwards to the Bruce thing I was going to tell you.
Yes, please.
In the Netflix show...
Yes.
So I think if you want to get to know Bruce, if you're interested, I would watch the Netflix show, which is him... One man show, him and an acoustic guitar, telling stories and playing songs.
Oh,
talking
that's cool.
A lot about his parents.
I love that. Wow.
And there's a moment where he says that he has a recurring dream where he's at Giant Stadium or a rock show watching himself. Mm-hmm. And then he goes up and he sees his dad in the audience. And then he goes up and he puts his arm around his dad, who and him and his dad had a terrible relationship.
Oh, really? Okay.
Terrible. His dad didn't want him. His dad was just not accepting of him playing music, and he would always, you know, turn that goddamn guitar off, you know, whatever, get that thing out of my house. Wasn't accepting of the long hair and the sort of slacker person that Bruce was at that age. So Bruce goes up to his dad in his dream and puts his arm around him and goes, you see that guy on stage? That's how I see you.
Oh, my God.
And then he plays like an acoustic song about his dad and everyone cries.
Wow.
And yeah. So that is a moment I think about. I think that's a lot of people's relationships with their dads generally. And I would say that if you want to get to know Bruce, dive in there and then watch some live in Barcelona stuff on YouTube, and you'll get the full package.
100%. Now, what is it about Bruce specifically that you're drawn to?
I mean, now you said you were hoping we'd go an hour. I mean,
I know.
You don't have to say anything else.
We haven't even gotten to the low point yet.
Yeah.
So it's good.
What about him specifically? I mean, I think to adapt a line from You've Got Mail, my favorite movie.
Is it really?
It's one of them. Yeah.
Okay.
Springsteen is the I Ching. Everything that is true and good about life is in his music, I believe. And I would say if I were to make it as succinct as I can for the show, he best encapsulates the desperation that many of us have to sort of break out of whatever life we were given and live some sort of big, fantastical, incredible life, bite the fruits of life and let the juices drip from our chin. He encapsulates that with the sort of terror and tragedy, if you will, of that not always happening, right?
Yeah.
And then he also sort of covers it on the other end with the joy and the passion or whatever of living sort of a day-to-day of your day-to-day sort of existence. And it's all sort of, it's all in there. And
like
all
it's
of
all,
it,
yeah.
Yeah. All of the doubt, the passion, the enthusiasm, the anxiety, the joy, hate, all of it is sort of encapsulated in all of those songs. And yeah, like even Born to Run, right? The one song you know, I'll pick my lyric from there that this came on the other day on, I don't listen to nothing but Born to Run, but it did come on the other day when I was working out or something, and one of the lines that jumped out at me for this in this particular listen was, I want to know if love is wild. I want to know if love is real. Now, to me, there's a lot of singers who write about love and stuff like that. But to me, that is such like an interesting idea of, he's not writing a love song. I love this person so much and they're perfect for me. He's like, I don't even know if this idea exists.
Yeah.
And I want to know if it's as big as I've always imagined it to be. Right?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I'll just quote Bruce lyrics all
no,
day.
No, I don't.
But, yeah.
I.
And then, oh, let me just do one
no,
more thing
please,
on Bruce
please,
and then
yeah.
I'll, yeah.
No.
I also think he encapsulates a lot of what
I love
in
just,
music.
I just want to point out, I love your sitting up. You're
yeah,
like,
I'm now, it's like that meme, the video game meme, where
yeah,
I
yeah, where
back
it's like,
and,
let me sit up. Oh, no, don't sit back.
No, no, I wasn't getting to sit up, I was just adjusting. But he's the best at all the different kinds of music I like. And then if he releases albums just acoustic on a guitar, and they're amazing, beautiful sort of singer-songwriter-y albums. And then he also will go on stage and do a four-hour full band concert, horns, guitar solos, everything. And then he'll also just shred on guitar. And he does everything. He's a master of all the different facets.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
First off, I'm now officially a Bruce fan.
Yeah, take it for a spin.
Yeah, I'm kind of just like sitting here taking it all in. Again, as someone who like doesn't know Bruce, and like I knew like my aunt was into him, and I knew like because my experience with him has always been like he's the boss, right? And like I never really kind of gave it a chance or really, but it just seems like very down to earth. Like it's very, I don't know, I can't even like it's just relatable. It can be relatable to everybody, which I guess is why, yeah.
I mean, I certainly have found it, and he's from New Jersey, and so am I. My older brother got me into him, and my dad was sort of into him also.
So that makes sense.
That's sort of is how I discovered him, probably.
Yeah.
Because my brothers are much older than me.
What album would you recommend to start with if you haven't listened to any?
I would probably say I would go Born to Run if you wanted to start, because that's probably my
favorite. You just recommend Born to Run again.
Yeah. I would that album is probably, that's my favorite album, it's probably.
Favorite,
I would
say
that one, and then I would probably say, I mean, it sort of depends what you're into. It's, again, back to fit, right? I got to pick the best. I got to be a Bruce sommelier. I got to pick the best Bruce album to match whatever the person's into.
And I'm trying to think, like, you know what's funny is, like, I don't know. And I don't want this to sound sad at all. Like, I do love music. I just don't know if, like, I've connected with an artist like that from a musician that much.
I mean, this is going to be, I don't even think of myself as bragging.
Yeah.
But I don't know many people who have connected to any artist as much as I've connected to Bruce, for better and for worse. I mean, we were talking about low points, talking about breakups. I saw Bruce after a breakup, whatever, a year ago, more, I don't know, whenever it was. And I was like, oh, this is exactly what I needed.
Yeah.
I needed to go back to church. I needed to get salvation.
Well,
going.
That's what's really interesting is like, one thing I'm really interested about is like, because church and religion, it's just, I don't know, maybe just in my world, but it doesn't resonate with as many people as it did before, I don't think. And I don't know if that's like a fair thing to say.
Yeah, no, I've never been a religious person at all. It's never resonated
with
me at all.
That's what I'm saying. So I'm always fascinated where people go to find that now.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people obviously like, you know, a lot of people say like they're spiritual and stuff like that. And it's so interesting that like so you go to Bruce for like, almost like a preacher almost for like sermon.
Yeah. And I mean, it is that is sort of how, and I understand I guess the difference would be that I don't expect that Bruce is going to tell me about the afterlife or anything like that.
No,
but I mean, I'm sure that if anyone knows it's him, but I don't expect, but you know, I don't sort of give him like sincerely these otherworldly powers, but in terms of the feelings of like values, community, and like sort of emotional release that people get, the feeling of being understood by, to some extent, a higher power.
Yeah.
I do think that those things I do deeply, like, sincerely, 100% connect with.
And you know what I never understood, actually, just going back to our conversation about, like, dads and stuff, or my dad, at least. Like, you would ask my dad, and he'd be like, oh, Bruce is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, he doesn't look at Bruce's music like that, you know? Like, it's almost like he doesn't connect to it on that level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's so interesting. Like, you know, he would be like, because my dad's big thing is like, you know, like, he's a guy, he hated the Super Bowl halftime show with Kendrick
and
stuff like that. You know what I mean?
So your dad's like, is like a meme almost.
It's very like, you know, and it's just, he's not, I mean, he's from Long Island. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I try not to make the excuse. He's from like that older generation now. But, you know, it's just like, And it's hard because, like, I used to think we were the same, but we're really not. You know, and it's like that's something you learn. Like, and it's something I explore in the show is like, you know, but that's just something you learn as you get older. But he would almost just say that and feel that way, even though like he doesn't really connect with him. You know what I mean? Like, my dad's a huge like Paul McCartney fan, mm-hmm. but if you're telling me like he's not feeling those same things like when he listens to Paul McCartney, or maybe he is, and maybe I'm just being ignorant. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just literally sitting here thinking about what Bruce songs about his dad I'm going to send you when we're done.
Oh, please do. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah. That'd be really great.
But yes,
I'm just sobbing on the way home. I'm like, Brian.
Yeah. But
next time you see me, I have a tattoo of Bruce just like
you have
on
an Independence
arm.
Day tattoo. But I mean, not to take this emotional thing about your dad and bring it back to Bruce, but that is what exactly what I'm going to do. Which is that he is he's a famously misunderstood artist that Born in the USA. I mean, Born in the USA gets played at every July 4th thing and party ever, and it's like not a patriotic song in that way that people think it is.
Sure.
It's a different vision of patriotism, I would say. But
it brings up like a really, like, just being understood as an artist, right, and how you're the work you're being put out there for, right? It brings up, like, I remember, like, Jim Gaffigan, I think this was during COVID, tweeted something. I think he tweeted, like, fuck Trump. Mm-hmm. I think this is a while ago during his first term. And I remember, like, I mean, that's big for Jim Gaffigan because, like, he does not curse. He's very famously very clean in his act. And so many people, like, unfollowed him. And he was like, I think I'm paraphrasing. I apologize if I'm getting it wrong. But he was like, I don't care, like, that if you're unfollowing me, if you're a fan of this guy, like, no, then, mm-hmm. you know, don't be a fan of mine. And it's funny because it's like, here it is, like, people are interpreting, it's like, oh, it's like wholesome comedy because it's clean and stuff like that. And not to say you can't still connect with it. I just don't think they're connecting at that level.
Right.
Yeah.
But hopefully there's something for everyone. I mean, you can go see, you know, you can go see Gaffigan and be like, oh, he talks about Hot Pockets and my cousin used to eat Hot Pockets. And so that's funny.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
exactly.
And totally fine.
Right. Which is, yeah.
And, or you can connect with him on sort of this like deeper level where he's being, you know, he's sort of, and I don't know his stuff as well, but sort of pointing out generally the way any great comedian does, sort of like the double standards or things that don't make sense in our world, in our broader world, right?
And I like that you said that too, because I want to check myself in that. It is okay to connect with someone at that service level. Mm-hmm. Like, not everything needs to be like deeply entrenched in like childhood trauma or like anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, it can just be, I like this guy's shirt, so.
Right, 100%. I think,
people have a right to that.
Yeah. I mean, I like sharing stuff with people who don't, like, who aren't necessarily going to get it on that level right away.
Yeah.
I mean, I took someone to see Bruce like a year ago, and she was like, yeah, no, I get it now. And I was like, thank you.
No, now
you understand where I'm
100%,
coming from.
100%,
yeah. And to go back to the thing about
Bruce?
Child. No, we're going to get off. I mean,
No, it's okay. This is the Bruce episode.
Yeah, perfect.
This is a Bruce Springsteen podcast now.
I mean, there must be one of those. But if there isn't, I have a project for the ride home. To go back to what you said about engaging everything and, like, not everything has to be about childhood trauma, I always, sort of my motto as far as mental health to the extent that I have one is, it's of course it's okay not to be okay, but it's also okay to be okay. And I feel like we don't say that enough.
Yeah, that's a really good,
it's like okay to just be doing all right.
Yes, because there is this idea, it's like I need to be, like, the idea of, like, being happy is like I need to be elated. I need to be, you know, like, jubilant, to use a douchey word. But, like,
a good word.
I'm trying, man. We're in a bookstore.
You're a big deprecator.
I don't know what that word means.
You put yourself,
self-deprecating. Yes. I do, and I preface too much. So that's something I'm trying to watch, because I have this, I'm terrified of how people view me and stuff like that. I'm one of these people, like, I think everybody hates me. So
me
I try
too,
being
yeah.
extra, yeah. So I try being extra nice and, like, things like that. Like, right now, I'm like, oh my God, I cut him off while I'm speaking. So that's in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I've been thinking
right
the
now.
Same thing that I cut
my God.
You off.
Oh, no, see, this is, and that's not even.
We just won't talk. We both just don't talk for the rest of the show. Silent
this
podcast.
Is,
nobody cuts each other off. And then we both leave thinking that we hate each other. That's a good episode.
People look, this episode's 6 hours, but it's not even, they're not talking for most of the time.
It's 6 hours of silence, and then you hear us hugging and saying, that was fun.
And then Born to Run ends it. Brian, I want to hear your stage name, and then we promise the viewers we're going to get into the low point.
Right. Yeah, so my stage name probably would have been Michael. Either Michael Elberg, because Michael's my middle name.
Okay, that makes
or
sense.
Or Michael. I thought about changing my... Well, I thought about making it some version of Michael Elberg, but then I thought Elberg's probably too Googleable. So then I wasn't sure what I was going to go with. Then my mom's maiden name and my grandfather, my grandparents who I was very close to, was their last name was Carol. So I wanted to have some combination of those
names. Oh, that's a good one.
Names, right?
Michael Carroll?
Yeah, I like that
a lot.
Maybe it's a little too... Yeah, and I guess... Yeah, I think that probably would have been it.
Yeah, it's way better than... No, I'm just kidding. I'm like, it's way better than Brian Elbridge. You can... No, Michael Carroll's a good one. I like the thought process behind it because it's also meaningful to you and stuff like that.
What would yours be?
Dude, I don't know. I think I could pass for an Eric, I think... You're the first person to say no.
No. Wow. But I'm not saying no to the name.
No.
I'm saying no to, what does it mean I could pass for an Eric?
That's a really good question that I haven't thought about. And it's like, you know, like I think
Have you ever said that sentence before? I could pass for an Eric?
All the time.
And what no people, one ever said, what does that mean?
No one has ever said this. Okay. No, so this is good, like explaining. Like, what does that mean? I guess, like, I could pass for an Eric. I don't know what it means on... Talk about not everything has to be that deeper level, but no, I don't know what it means, like why I kind of gravitate towards that name. Maybe it's like the different Erics I know, almost like, you know, like how when people name babies, not that any of us have kids, either of us have kids, but like you just associate certain things with like Erics and stuff like you've known in the past. I don't know. I guess in my mind, Eric's like a nice guy, chill.
Is there a specific Eric
that
you
comes
got
to
no?
mind?
Yeah.
No, I know. Well, there was one Eric that was in my friend's college band. And this is actually a shout out to them. They're the Humble Cheaters. Their music's excellent.
That's a good name. Good
great name. They have a song that I'm obsessed with. I got to find the name of it. But no, it's like Prishchot or something. I can't pronounce it. So I couldn't even tell you what it is. But the Humble Cheaters, look them up. And I remember specifically that I was doing improv in college. And Eric came to a show. I wasn't direct friends with Eric. I was direct friends with Rob, who was in his band. And Eric came to the show like just to check out art and like just to be like supportive for a live audience. And that meant so much to me at like that stage where I was like, you know, I had to force people to come to my crappy college improv show.
Yeah.
And Eric was just like, yeah, man, I'm here to like check it out. And that was really cool.
And
so maybe it's him.
And so do you think it is him?
I don't think it's him. I do think... This is so fascinating, and I love that we're like talking about it because I've never dived deep into this. But I do think I must associate Eric, and I don't know why, truthfully. Maybe it is with him. Maybe it's through some other, you know, something else. But I do associate Eric with just coolness and, like, Eric, you know?
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? So I think that's probably what it is. Yeah. Also, too, it's like, I guess based on the Erics I've known, I think I could pass for Eric.
Right. And your dad might think it's a Trump thing. So then you've got something going there.
And then it's all 100%.
Yeah, I mean, he assumes it's Eric Trump. It's no Eric who came to my improv show in 2007. And
The exact opposite.
Yeah, exactly.
Of Eric Trump. But no, as far as like my stage name goes, I didn't, I don't know. I was one of those, like, I love the story of like Donald Glover putting in for how he chose like his rap name, and it's just like Childish Gambino. It was like, boom, I would go with that. So like I played around with that a few times, but I never got one I liked. And I don't know, there is something I think
you played around with the Wu-Tang name generator.
No, not the Wu-Tang.
Isn't that where his is from?
That's where his is from. Sorry,
was
thank
like,
you
there
for...
was a chance your stage name was almost like Childish Gambino. Imagine buying tickets to see someone with like to see Childish Gambino, and then you come out on stage
doing
and
it's jokes
like,
about being an Eagle Scout.
Yeah, exactly. People are like, wow. Childish Gambino, alternate title Eric.
This man's a wild card.
Yeah,
oh my god.
It would almost be like, oh my god, it'd be like Neil Brennan, three mics. At this mic, I'm Childish Gambino, and at this mic, I'm Eric, and at this mic, I'm Matt Pena.
He didn't say one curse word. Yeah. You would think with a name like that, he would at least. Oh my god, that's so funny. So I didn't, but I. It's so good. I will say I do think there's something. I do like the honesty of being on stage with your real name.
Yeah.
I think that's. I think just from a professional aspect, I wish I would have changed it.
But right.
There
that's
is,
what I think too.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, and I think like. Yeah, I think. I like that people know me, and it's. I got to stick with it now because I can't be not Matt Pena comedy.
Right.
It's It's what it is on social.
And this, we got into this conversation because you asked if at work people, students and teachers know I do comedy.
Yeah.
Which they do. I don't hide it. They just look, kids look to their teachers up and other staff members, I guess, have found it. And other staff members have come see me do comedy, which is fine. And then students find me on Instagram, at Brian Elberg, and they say, and the ones who have told me they found me typically say I am funnier than they expected, which I feel like is the highest compliment that
100%
I could get.
Yes, absolutely.
From a high schooler.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, oh my God, absolutely. Are you funny in class with the kids?
I try to be.
Okay.
I do a lot. I'm a lot of my humor as a teacher is me trolling.
Okay.
And so, like, for example, two of my favorite students, not that I have favorites, let's do another take there. Two students who I happen to joke around with and laugh a lot with more than other kids. They're twins, and it was their birthday 2 days ago.
Okay.
And I have, like, a calendar in my room that has kids' birthdays, and they happen to share the same birthday as John Hamm and Chuck Norris.
Oh, get out. Wow.
So I just, like, put on my slides that day. I was like, guys, you have some really special birthdays
today.
That's
really funny.
And then I flipped to the next slide. It was John Hamm and Chuck Norris. And I was like, these are really two important people. We got to just make sure we're respecting them today. And so, like, jokes like that where it's like, I'm just kind of being a troll.
Did it get a big laugh?
It did, but I get, it got kind of like a no, I guess, if I'm pausing for this long. It didn't get a big laugh, but it got a fun reaction.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's, is it, I think I know the answer, but is it worse bombing on stage or in front of class?
Way worse on stage because in class, well, my job isn't to be funny.
That's, yeah.
And they'll kind of hit me with, oh, you think you're funny, but you're not, whatever. And I can kind of go back at them and I do a lot of jokes with them where I pretend that I'll be like, oh, I posted a video yesterday and a lot of people commented it was cringe. But that's, I don't know if you guys know, but cringe means really cool and funny. You know, jokes like that. And I'm like, oh, they, and so like,
by the
students.
Way, love it.
Yeah. And so the students think, like the smartest students get that I'm making a joke.
Gotcha.
The sort of next level down is laughing at me.
I see.
Right? They're laughing at me thinking like, oh, this moron thinks that all of these comments that say cringe are compliments, right?
Yeah.
I used to do a thing where if they had their phones out in class, I would record fake TikToks on their phone and I would just say like,
that's funny,
like silly,
oh,
cringy
dude, I wish
phrases.
You were my math teacher.
And
this
I would be
great.
Like, and I would be like, what's up TikTok? Stay Gucci out there. Like, what's up to all my followers on the For You page? Like, we're coming at you today in geometry with some like stupid hard problems. You don't even know. The kids are OD tight. And it's like, I'm just using phrases that like, I'm pretending I think I'm being sincerely cool.
Yes,
And so, like, jokes like that, some kids are in on the joke, some kids think I'm just sincerely being cringy.
Yeah, they're like, what is this guy
doing?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Which, it's the same thing in stand-up. Not everybody's in your audience, and that's okay.
But in stand-up, the expectation is I should be funny, that I'm not really, if I'm not being funny on some level to an audience, it's like, then I shouldn't be saying anything.
Do you censor what you put out on social media because you're a teacher?
Minimally.
Okay.
I do in that I try. All right. Like I have one joke that I did at some point where the joke was about how there are more teachers that have hooked up with students than you would expect there to be. And then the joke I did at the time was I hooked up with the same number of students as a high school teacher that I did when I was in high school.
Okay.
Which is one. And that obviously is a lie, right?
Yeah,
and the joke there is that I'm being sarcastic. But that is a joke I would never put out online.
Oh, of course.
Because
of course.
It's like, this is
just... You want
just
us to cut it from here?
You can keep it in there because there's like the context of me saying, I'm about to say a thing
that's
not true.
Okay, sure.
But I was always nervous about that getting clipped.
Yeah.
That getting clipped as a joke.
Sure.
And it's like, you know. And then that's out there. And there's just a video of their math teacher saying that.
Yeah,
it's like,
which,
you know. And whatever. But
But what I would also say, too, in defense of that is, like, it's, I understand the joke. I also don't think that that's emblematic of your act, because I've seen your act, and it's very, like, it's a good joke, and that's not what I'm saying, but what I love about your act is, like, you let us into who you are.
Oh, thank you.
And, of course, which I think is what any good stand-up should do, like, and you obviously do it on stage, so I also, like, I'm just trying to say, like, it's not like you're that kind of comedian where it's also like you're just making stuff up. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and that joke, I cut from the act for a reason.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Even because I think it's inappropriate, because I don't think it's a very good joke.
Sure.
But that was just the first thing that came to mind, is something I'd censor.
Of course, yeah.
And what I try to do in my act is, what I hope people take away on some level, is that I am a teacher and I do sincerely love that job.
Yeah.
I'm not, and there is some critical mass of teacher comedy that is like, here's the list of things I hate, right? It's like, oh, the kids are dumb, and this person's dumb, and I hate this and that. And maybe those are sprinkled in. But it's like, I hope people don't come away from watching me do stand-up being like, here's a guy who teaches all day and then shits on the job.
No, that's not what you walk away from at all. And can I, you have my favorite on-stage opener that, it's one of my favorites. Can I share it?
Sure.
Brian gets up on stage and he says, I don't even care if this goes well. I'm a teacher during the day, so it's just nice to talk to a quiet group of people. And first time I heard that, I was cackling. It still makes me laugh. It's like one of my favorite opening jokes.
Oh, thank you.
And it's like, tells us so much about you. And it also in a way, like, puts the audience at ease, because it's like such a well-constructed joke that I think, like, the good thing, obviously, is like with an opening joke, it's like, you want the audience to be like, okay, we're in like a good pilot's hands almost, right? It's like
right.
You're piloting a plane. And that immediately does that, and we're in. Oh. It's just so good.
Thank you very much.
Of course.
I started doing that at mics when everyone would bomb.
Really? That was the origin of it.
Well, yeah, because it was just like, I don't even care if I also bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
Everyone's been bombing, and you know, open mics, everyone bombs, including me all the time. Like, this is what we, but it was, yeah, like, I don't even care if I also bomb.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the worst thing that can happen when you try to speak to people.
That's incredible, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
So, we've kept the people waiting long enough.
All right, got it.
If they're still with us. I want to get into your low point today.
Okay.
And you sent me a few options over Instagram. So, if it's okay, I'd like to pass it off to you to let me know what you would like to talk about.
I could talk about any one of them. We started talking about when I was studying abroad in London.
Yeah,
before.
Let's go back to that.
We could talk about that. We could talk about other stuff in college. Most of the low points are in college.
Which I
Even though I reflect very positively on college as a whole, but I think it's just such an emotional time.
It's such formative years. And we had Jamel Sirleaf, who's another great comedian, on, and his low point as well was in college and all throughout school, really. But what's interesting about college is it's this period in your life where, for a lot of people, it's the first time you're really on your own, and you're kind of thrown into this 4 years where you have the expected pressure of, you need to get good grade. You have a job, quote-unquote, which is, well, I don't even know if quote-unquote, you have a job, which is that you need to excel in school enough so that you can provide for yourself when you get out of college, which is a lot of pressure to start. And also, too, it's like, you don't know who you are.
Right.
And you're figuring that out, and a lot of the times, it's so cringy. And I said this to Dave Colombo, who was on the podcast as well. What's good is, like, if you're looking back at that period at how cringy you are, and I'm speaking about myself. If you're looking back at the person you were 5 years ago and you're cringing, that's a good sign of growth.
Right.
Which I try to always keep in mind when I look in that period. But tell us more. Well, where'd you go to school?
I went to Boston University.
Oh, you went to school in Boston?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I think Jamel went there too, or someone else on the
podcast.
Yeah,
I think he did.
Oh, very cool. So you went, and that's more of like a city feel campus, right?
Yeah, very much. It doesn't feel like a campus that much at all. Oh, yeah, check away.
All right, we're doing great.
We're doing, oh, great.
Yeah.
that's like one step above doing.
I know, I'm sorry, I know.
No,
you know, it's like the problem with like self-producing it, because like people might see on the video too, I'm just checking to make sure the cameras are running.
Of course.
I'm like also producing this while doing it.
Yeah, no, now I was just, I'm just giving you a time.
I know.
Yeah, it's like 18,000 person school, and it is, it doesn't feel like a campus, and like there's not like a big quad, you know. There's nothing like that. It just is kind of Commonwealth Avenue from like Beacon Street, the intersection of those two, then further up into like Alston is basically like the campus.
Gotcha.
And like every building sort of in that stretch is Boston University's campus.
Okay, so you get to Boston University.
Yeah.
Did you always want to be a teacher?
No, I didn't really want to be a teacher until I started teaching.
Wow. Wait. Yeah. Okay. So you went into school. What were you studying?
I studied political science.
Okay.
Which a lot of people say is the hardest major.
At BU?
No.
Or just in general?
It's the easiest major in general. I was being deprecated. self-deprecating. So I studied that, and I thought about going into teaching when I was at BU. I took a class at the School of Education. And at the School of Education, it was a class where there was like, hours of lecture, and we talked a lot about like theories and John Dewey and all these sort of educational philosophers, and we did one day a week of student teaching. And I like loved the student teaching, and I couldn't stand everything else.
Yeah.
But then I was like, I can't take any more classes about teaching. So what I decided to do is I applied for Teach for America.
Oh, and then nice. I had a friend who did that as well.
Yeah, where did they do it?
That's a great question, and I wish I could remember.
No worries. I did it. I'll talk more about myself. I did it. here in New York, in the North Bronx.
Okay, gotcha.
So I was placed here, and I moved here.
You did it during the summer?
No. So Teach for America, you just are a full year. You're just a full teacher at the school.
Mm-hmm.
All the Teach for America really does is they pay for your grad school to get your master's, and then they also help you get a job. They basically guarantee you'll be able to get a job, and they sort of help you with the certification process.
Oh, gotcha. So this was after
college.
Career?
Okay, yeah, gotcha. After college. Gotcha. So then when I was straight out of college, I graduated in May, and then I started teaching in
September.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. And you went to the North Bronx?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. So you're in college, you're studying political science.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you're not really, you don't have like a full direction on where you want to go.
No.
So take us through, was it like, did you feel like isolated or?
I wouldn't say that I felt isolated because I look back on college very fondly. I had a very great group of friends who was still in many ways like my core group. I had the same roommate for all 4 years. Andrew.
That's great.
I mean, I know that we're talking low points, but I sincerely say the high point of my life probably is I officiated Andrew's wedding a couple years ago to his
amazing.
Wife, Bianca, who Andrew and I lived together. Bianca was our neighbor sophomore year of college.
Stop.
She became our friend, and then they started dating our senior year.
Yeah.
They dated for like about 5-6 years, and then they got married after that.
And so you got to sort of like see that relationship bloom and stuff. That's
and
incredible.
So, I officiated the wedding, and it was incredible.
That's great, too, because you also get time.
Yeah. People were saying, are you gonna make clips and put this on? But I and trust me, I have thought about it. I have not done it yet. If you ever see a clip on my Instagram of Andrew and Bianca's wedding, just know that things in comedy are not going the way that I want them to go. But there were some good jokes in there, if I do say so myself.
I'm sure.
So I would say, like, early on, I would say, like, one of the low points I told you about, which I don't mind talking about, early on in college, freshman year, so I didn't drink at all in high school.
Okay.
At all. I was, like, very much, if I can show you a picture on my phone later, but I, like, was a senior in high school and a freshman in college, and I looked like I was 12 or 13 years old.
Okay.
I was one of those kids. I had no facial hair. I had a buzz cut. I still had, like, baby fat. You know, I was just, like, looked like a child.
Sure.
And I was sort of had, like, a goody two-shoes-ness about me that, like, not even in, like, what's her name from Election? Flick? Tracy Flick?
Not sure.
I guess, like, she's sort of, like, an ambitious goody two-shoes in a sense, and then I guess she break some rules at the end of the movie, so maybe that's not a good analogy. But my point is, I wasn't like a goody two-shoes and like, I'm going to get into an Ivy League school by following all the rules. I was a goody two-shoes like a child is.
Oh, like, really?
Like, I mean, my mom will tell this story from time to time, but I think I was like in the 7th or 8th grade, and I said to my mom, like, sincerely, did you know that there are kids who get homework and they just don't do it?
Stop it, Brian.
And she was like, what do you mean? And I was like, they know they haven't. They don't. It was like me doing, like, I was almost, I think back of this as me having, like, the cadence of doing, like, bad stand-up and being like, it's not that they don't know it was assigned. They have a planner. I see them write it down in the planner. And then they don't do it. And so that was sort of my, like, attitude for good chunks of high school was like, oh, if someone tells me to do something, I'll do it. I was very much just, like, a rule follower in that whole way. And then, early on in college, I guess, and then early on in college, so then I get to college, right, and people are just, like, drinking a bunch, no idea how to handle it, sort of, like, classic out of a cautionary tale.
Sure.
A kid who goes to college, doesn't know what he's doing, drinks too much, blacks out.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and, I mean, I was fine in the end, but I did.
Wait. So take us back to that. So was that your first night experience with alcohol?
No, probably, like, my fourth.
Four? Oh, wow. So, like, very early on.
I think so. Maybe single digits, probably.
So now you had alcohol for the first time, like, freshman year of college.
Yeah.
And so
or the summer before, but the first time I really drank was then,
Was then, okay. Yeah. So now, was it, like, the social pressure that you were just, like...
Not even social pressure. I was excited to do it.
Oh,
it was
you wanted
sort of
to try it. Yeah.
I felt like I was, like, oh, I followed all those rules then, but now...
Now
I can be sort of, like... I can, like, cut loose. And I didn't even know... Like when I was in high school and they would talk about like the ills of drinking, I was so far removed from that that I didn't even, they might as well have been teaching me how to like land a rover on Mars. I was like, I don't even get invited to parties. So like, I'm very far removed from like what happens when I drink too much.
Sure. So you didn't even like think about it.
Didn't even think about it.
Wow.
Like it didn't occur to me. It, right. Like, this may be dumb, but it didn't even occur to me that it like was a bad idea.
No, but that makes sense.
Right.
You didn't know people didn't do homework.
Yeah, exactly. And then by the end of high school, I wasn't reading all the, you know, Dostoevsky they were trying to make me read. But,
you're like, I only read 3/4 of the
book. Exactly. But yeah, I was just like such a rule follower. And then I went to college. And there are two things I associate with happening early in college. One is that I drank way too much one night and I peed on my friend's floor. And then the second is... there was another kid from my high school friend group who went to BU.
Okay.
And he, a bunch of the other kids who I knew in high school, including including other kids that I like played basketball with, went to visit him and they didn't tell me. And I just like saw them. And it was one of those, again, like goody two shoes being like, hey, oh, great, you guys are here.
Oh, no. So you like, you were just, like, happy to see them. You didn't even...
At first. And then, like, it was only... I don't remember when I actually realized this. And I was like, oh, they, like... there was a conversation about whether or not to tell me that they were here.
Ugh.
You know? Which and was... And I think we were talking about before, both of us share the insecurity of wondering if everyone hates
us. Yeah, that's, like, your worst nightmare.
Yeah, it's, like, sincerely my worst...
Well,
I mean,
especially... Because, like... And, again, I don't... I feel like we're the same in that... At that age... We didn't have the self-confidence or the self-esteem to, like, be like, it's okay that these people don't like me. I'm still, like, whatever. So, oh, my God, that must have crushed you when you realized that.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't fun. Like, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
That one I don't even think back as – I honestly was so naive at the time that I don't even look back. Like, I don't remember being incredibly depressed after that happened. It's more when I think back on it, I'm like, oh, I think that was pretty formative in a way I didn't realize at the time.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
And it was your friend group from high school that had done that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like continue to hang out with them after like summer?
No, not really. We were sort of distant already. Like we weren't.
Okay.
My friends in high school were all fine, but we weren't a group with the exception of like one person. We weren't a group that was like, we're going to be pals forever.
Okay.
I mean, I sort of had that sense even in high school.
Yeah. I'm kind of the opposite in that way because I had my friends in high school, and then we were kind of like we're that's the group I'm doing the fantasy baseball draft with tomorrow, and then like my college friends I really just lost touch with after college.
Oh, I guess most people kind of go one way or the other.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like it's interesting that you said that it impacted you in a way that you didn't even realize at that time,
right?
Unless you're looking back,
right?
Can you talk like more about that?
Sure, because I think that. The feeling of I'm very much someone who when I my fear is people don't like me. That's a fear that I have. I think most people who go into comedy probably have that fear.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of the a lot of the stuff I do and a lot of the stuff probably a lot of people do is wanting to be liked. Right. So like I will text you when I leave here today and tell you that I had a great time, which is true. But I'm doing it because it's the truth, but I'm also doing it to confirm that you also had a good time.
And you know what I'm going to do because I feel the same way? I'm going to like that message.
Boom.
And then I'm going to say, it was a pleasure having you. Also because it's true, but also because I'm going to give you that validation.
Right, exactly.
And I'm telling you it's okay to just like that message because if I'm in your boat, I would be like, I got to write back. I got to be the last one to respond.
I think in that case, I would be fine just liking it because I already said I had a great time. Like, I don't need to one-up you.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I need to know we both had a great time.
And this, what's so funny is like, you're in a better place than me. Cause I'd be like, I have this fear and it adds to it where it's like, I text the most in my guy's friend group chat and I have to react to every message that's sent.
Oh really?
Yeah. So it's like, for example, we have our fantasy baseball draft tomorrow and it's like, I hearted hot exclamation point, like almost every message in the chat just because like, I don't know why that is.
Is it because it's now... What would happen if you didn't do that?
I would... that's a really good question. I guess in that moment, I'm like... I feel... A lot of times, I feel an obligation to respond.
Mm-hmm.
So that is like, if you text me, I feel obligated that I need to get back to you. Unless I just genuinely, like, forget about it. If I did not respond to it, I would feel bad because I would think about how that person... is probably like, oh, I sent this and nobody laughed at it.
Right.
Which is more, I'm realizing, about my fear.
Right.
That like I send something and someone, yeah.
You're projecting your fear onto them.
Yeah.
That's something I do a lot too. I'm trying to get better at that.
Do you, going back to the low point there. So you had this moment where you see your people from high school. Mm-hmm. They're not talking to you. Did you have a friend group at BU like freshman year?
Almost immediately. And I think one of the so I don't remember the exact timeline of all these different things happening. But my friend group at BU, I became very close with Andrew, my roommate, right away.
OK,
we are the story of us become we met on a website called youroomsurf.com,
nice.
Which was a website. I'm sure that now there's like Facebook groups and Instagram things and other ways to do it. But it was a website designed. It was kind of like a dating app, but for roommates. And the whole goal was just like, you don't want to get someone crazy.
Yeah.
Right? So we decided to, we like met on there. We both like video games and sports. We both. I could tell he wasn't like overly like aggro. He didn't have one of those profiles like, we're going to get fucked up every night and we're going to like to show you how not aggro we were. Andrew and I dated. We lived together for 4 years. We lived together for 4 years. We did not sexile each other one time for 4 years.
You were just if somebody was having sex, the other guy was in the room with us.
that was not the problem. We in fairness, our senior year, he had a girlfriend, so did I. We had an apartment we shared with different rooms, but we lived in the same room for 3 years and we never did that.
Just out of respect for the other person.
No, because we weren't bringing any women back. I would have loved to have done that to him ever. And he would have enjoyed doing it to me, I'm sure. It wasn't out of respect. It was out of how pathetic we were. Yeah.
What video games were you guys playing?
We played a lot of Madden. We played a lot of FIFA.
Nice.
FIFA was like the classic college one.
Yeah.
Big time. FIFA 2014, they had lounge mode. Lounge mode was great. You know about lounge mode?
No.
So me, Rob Polito, Colton Kirschner, and Andrew Gelblatt, we had a lounge mode we had where you had a profile on the system and you could all log your profiles in and it like kept stats. So it kept stats. You could like look up and be like, when Brian plays Rob Polito, their record is this.
Oh,
and
man.
And the average goals is this and the average goals against. And so we would just play all the time.
That's amazing.
And just, yeah, I mean, it was awesome.
Whenever you have the stats to back it.
Yeah.
It's like so, oh my God.
And people would be like, there'd be like a lot of trash talk and there'd be a lot of, oh, I'm better than you, but then he's better than you, but then you're better than me. So there was a lot of that stuff.
That's really, did you guys ever do like any tournaments?
Oh, all the time.
That's
yeah.
So
I mean,
fun.
So Andrew and I did that right away. And I will always say that we became great. Like, we were friends right away. We had similar senses of humor. We both loved Seinfeld. We both were, like, pretty sarcastic and just, like, both committed to every bit. Mm-hmm. And I think of us being, there are two stories, I think, from, like, the first 2 weeks of college, my freshman year, was one of them, I just randomly on a whim was like, hey, do you think I could put on every T-shirt I own at one time?
Stop it.
And so there's a picture on Facebook of me wearing every T-shirt. And me and Andrew just took it on like our computer just with our arms around each other and me looking like I'm 400 pounds because I'm wearing every T-shirt. And just I remember how hard we were laughing, me just doing that and us just doing it together. And just to be like, there are a lot of people in the world who would not be enjoying this bit. And for us, that was huge. And then probably the second week of school, his grandmother called him.
Okay.
And his grandmother, I come into the room, he's on the phone. His grandmother's on the phone with him forever. And Andrew goes, oh, my God, my grandma's the worst. You know, she's talking to me about this, that, and the other thing. She was lecturing him about Four Locos and online poker. And he says to me at the end of the conversation, what do you do when your grandmother calls you and just lectures you? Or he said, does your grandmother ever call you and lecture you like that for a long time? And I said, no, all my grandparents are dead. So no, that doesn't happen. And we both just had this awkward pause and then started laughing really hard.
Sure,
and it was like, to me, I do think of that as like a hinge moment of like, he could have been like, oh, geez, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Or he could have laughed. And by choosing to laugh and like lean into that, it was like, oh, this is my kind of guy. We can laugh about anything.
Exactly.
Right,
exactly. He understood you in that moment.
And so
that.
We became great friends. And then he's always been really great about being friendly and making friends with other people. So,
oh, isn't that great when you can just coast?
So then he basically had this whole other friend group that he brought me into.
Gotcha.
And they sort of like accepted me right away. And I sort of all liked them right away, probably because I was like, oh, I didn't have super close friends in high school.
Right.
Now I feel like I'm fitting into a group. And then I embarrassed myself drinking too much. And then I was like, oh, I blew it. You know?
Well, can you take us through that night? What happened?
Sure. Gladly. I'll give you some preface to the night, which is I liked this group immediately, but I found in retrospect some of them did not like me immediately because I do a lot of... Well, sometimes people don't like me right away because they think I'm more aggro than I actually am, I think, because I do a lot of... My theory is that I do a lot of faux bragging.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, I will pretend I'm, like, the best at something or I'll pretend I'm, like, amazing. And to me, the joke is, like, obviously I'm pretending that I... am like in incredible shape. Like that's the joke. You
it's
know
almost
what I mean?
Like how your students, some of them won't get the joke that you're doing like the
right.
TikTok thing. Yeah.
Right. So like I remember doing a joke about how I was like my literally a joke about how I was starting to lift in college and my body was like a sculpture that I was like and I was to me I was like obviously this is like the douchiest thing a person could say.
Right, right.
So I'm saying it, but if I look back, we're all like I would also hate that guy. We're all insecure college kids, and this guy comes in describing these things. I would be like, oh, this guy sucks. And so, I mean, this is a quick tangent, but the similar thing still happens at work where we had a meeting earlier this year about classroom management styles. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's like this Polish woman, Margaret, and she's a teacher I work with. She's great. And we were partners, and we had just a normal conversation. And then they said, what strategies did you guys talk about in your groups? And I said, Margaret and I both believe that on the first day of school, you should fight the toughest student to assert dominance.
Wait, you said this in a school
meeting? In a meeting, I said that. And I remember, like, two people laughing and other people being like, oof. And me thinking, to me, saying woof is the craziest reaction ever because, like, either one of two things are true. Either you think I'm serious, in which case you should fire me. Because I'm saying sincerely I'm going to fight a student. And then the other thing that is possible is that you know I'm making a joke, so you know I'm not going to do it.
Right.
But, like, being, like, offended to me in that particular case makes no sense.
How did Margaret take it?
Margaret is a big fan of what I'm
Love
bringing to
that.
The table.
Oh,
Margaret,
fantastic.
Yeah. Margaret loved it. So, anyways, to go back, so this friend group I don't think liked me all right away. And then that night, it was the night of the BU-BC hockey game, which is kind of the Duke North Carolina
of New England hockey.
Yes.
And it was BU and who?
BU-BC.
BU-BC.
Big game.
Okay.
And so my friends and I like had a beer or two, went to the game.
This is your fourth night in college.
Not my fourth night, but probably like my fourth time drinking.
Gotcha.
It's early. It's pre-Thanksgiving, I believe.
Okay.
And then I remember just saying, so we had a couple drinks before the game. We then went to a friend's apartment afterwards. And then I, like, jokingly said, I'm going to drink until I don't remember this game. Because we lost. We got slaughtered. And I said it not realizing, like, what I was putting myself in a... Like, I don't even think I'd ever been... I'd maybe been hungover, but not really.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I was putting myself in position to do. So I literally woke up, like, I'd had a couple... I don't remember much else of the rest of the night, other than I was starting to get drunk. Woke up the next day. Andrew was asleep in our room. I remember that the shower on our floor wasn't working, so I went to take a shower, and then I went to our other friend's room. And then Andrew came in, and he was, like, mad at me. And I was like,
man,
why are you mad at me? And he was like, and he told me, I was like, oh, you peed on their floor. Like, I had to, like, take care of you. You were, you know, basically an embarrassment, right? And it was horrible. And so, like, even now as I'm saying it, I'm, like, starting to, like, sweat again. And I felt terrible. And it was, I think part of it was, there's like a few aspects of this. One, I heard someone say this recently that like, anytime someone like apologizes for anything, they like don't really, it just is like, apologizing is like a manipulative thing. But I remember immediately just like apologizing to everyone the next day.
Yeah.
I felt terrible. And I probably felt on some level like I was like costing myself this friend group that
I like.
And I also just acted like an asshole. And right? And I wanted to... you should apologize for that. You shouldn't just act in a way that is, you know, abhorrent. And then just be like, well, that's me. It's a learning experience. Like, it can be a learning experience and also something you need to apologize for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like... It's the worst fear because I feel like we share this again in that a lot of times you wonder, like, is this person mad at me? And do I have, like, are they mad at me over something I have no idea I did?
Right.
Because then it's like, if I have no idea they're mad at me, like, whatever, then maybe I'm acting in a way that is, like, making people mad at me.
Right.
Right? And, like, you have that situation where you literally black out. You don't remember anything. And, you know, it's funny because, like, when you first said peed on the floor, I think, I laughed, obviously.
Right.
But, like, being in that moment, some guy.
Of course.
And did you know the people in the room or not?
I knew them well. My friend Caroline, who's still one of my best friends. Oh, and, nice. Okay. Yeah.
So it's a happy ending.
I mean, relatively happy. Sure. I mean, happy in this, like, I wish it didn't happen.
No, of course, yeah.
But I guess, to me, a happy ending implies that it was, like, started something useful, whereas I think that it probably would all be friends regardless.
Yeah.
You know? And I guess, like, I immediately apologized. I offered to, like, I peed in her Uggs. I remember that was a big part of it.
Oh, no.
I offered to buy her new shoes.
Okay.
And I was just, like, texting, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Yeah. I hate myself, whatever. I didn't hang out with that group for a while after that. And I didn't drink for a while after that also. I've been in one of those, I was almost like a basketball player who, like, that part of my life, drinking-wise, was almost like a basketball player who, like, checks into the game and commits a flagrant foul and gets ejected on, like, the first play. And they're like, all right, you gave it a shot. Get out of here. Yeah, so that, I just felt horrible. I, like, didn't leave my room all week. I mean, and for, like, weeks, I felt horrible. And even still, this is one of those memories that will still, like, randomly pop into my head.
Yeah.
And I will just think about.
That's, and, oh,
on occasion.
God.
And yeah. I still feel guilty about it, even as I'm talking now. Yeah.
No, I know. Terrible. And it's, I mean, it's not great, but, like, sometimes I'll think back and I'll physically twitch.
Me too.
That makes me feel so much better.
I will close my eyes and just try to, like, if I blink hard enough, maybe this thing didn't happen.
Right, exactly. And you know what's funny is, like, I'll be driving with my fiance in the passenger seat, and this is it's a little personal. I'll just be like, like, I'll make that noise. And she knows what that means because we've been together so long. She's like, all right, what are you thinking about?
Yeah.
And then I'll tell her. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it makes me feel better. So it's an advantage or a benefit to, you know, having a partner who knows you that well.
Right.
But, oh, my God. And it's, you know, we talk about those cringy moments. When you get drunk and blackout, that's the scariest one. Because, like, you just... Because I blacked out in college as well, maybe, like, once or twice. And I remember my friend said, like, I made out with someone that I don't even remember. And it's like, it's...
That rules?
I not no, really. Kidding. Not really. Obviously, like, consensual and everything. But I was like, you know, it's just, you have no idea.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I know those roads.
No, I know.
Yeah.
So now you... Okay, so you... Like, it sounds like, you know, you found your way a little bit. Now, with alcohol specifically, do you still drink?
Yeah.
Nice, okay.
Yeah.
So it was more of like a learning experience thing with...
Yeah, and it took me... So, I mean, I still, you know, it's... I've had moments later in life, never anything that bad, but I certainly have had moments where I've drank too much since then. I mean, it's, you know... And I think it's... But it's not good. Like, you shouldn't do it. It's not cool.
No, yeah.
And I still have a thing, even if I have, like, two beers with a friend... I will do the thing where, like, hey, I had a great time last night, whatever. And I, you know, that neediness of being like, hey, I had fun. And part of it, I'm sure, is from that night of being like, I want to confirm everyone had a good time.
I am in the same exact boat
and
with
it's
you.
I do it when I hang out totally sober, but it's especially even if I have a couple of drinks with a friend.
Yeah.
Where it's like, just because probably that feeling of loss of control. Because I like to have control over my life and my... emotions.
And my fiance gets that really bad because she, first off, I love when she gets drunk because she's so funny and it's like whatever, but she wakes up the next day and constantly she's like, oh my God, what did I say? Did I say anything bad? And 99% of the time, she didn't do anything. 1% of the time, it's just like, she has no filter. So I'm like, but she's not like insulting anybody or whatever. But it's just like that. That's the thing with alcohol. And it's like, truthfully, like, I really don't drink anymore just because it's like, I've had so many of those days where I've woken up that anxiety, that hangover.
Yeah.
And it's just
the
like...
The anxiety is the worst part.
Oh, it's... that and simultaneously being hungover.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's the worst spot to be in.
Well, I almost think that sometimes when you're hungover, this is not a healthy thought to have, which I recognize. But sometimes when I'm hungover, I think this is good for anxiety because it's almost like the first couple weeks of COVID. How were you the first couple weeks of COVID?
The first couple weeks?
First couple weeks. Give me maybe two, 3 weeks of COVID, maybe four.
I remember fear.
Okay.
I was very scared because I didn't know what was going on. I was psyched because I was traveling for work at the time, so I got to stay at home.
Got it.
So that's kind of like where my...
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I have a theory that a lot of people with anxiety, not like diagnosable anxiety, but the feeling of feeling anxious sometimes, including myself, the first couple weeks of COVID were great because you, like, obviously terrible for the world, but in term, but it was like, oh, I have a job to do at all times. My job is to stay inside because I frequently have a feeling now, my whole life, I have a feeling of like, how should I be maximizing this day, right?
Yeah.
Should I be going for a run? Should I be writing? I have this friend I haven't seen in a while. I got to see that friend.
Yes.
Should I be trying to schedule a date? Should I be trying to call my dad or whatever? What should I be doing to maximize my time? First 3 weeks of COVID, it's like, no. This is, I have tasks to be doing all the time.
Yeah.
I need to be staying inside. I need to be washing my hands a lot. I need to be... making sure that I'm not getting anyone sick,
that
right? And to me, being hungover sometimes feels, it's like, oh, I can't do anything.
Yeah. No, that's fascinating. Well, also, too, because it's like the relief of just like, this is all I have to do, and it's very simple and straightforward.
Right.
Whereas, like, I know you and I share this crazy thing we do in comedy, and there's so many... I get overwhelmed every day with the amount of stuff we have to do.
Right.
I had to, you know, post podcast clips. I have to post on TikTok,
right.
Stand-up, then write work on my solo show, produce the show here at the bookstore.
Right.
And to have that during COVID, I know I said there was a lot of fear, but I did also have that too where it was like kind of freeing in a way where it's like, okay, we can just, this doesn't have to be, you know. But did you do Zoom shows?
Oh, many of them, yeah. I didn't do them very much. I was taking a break from comedy when COVID started.
Okay.
I went off to grad school for a year, and I was taking... Because I'd done comedy in New York for a couple of years before COVID.
Okay.
Maybe like a year or two. And then I was like, I don't know that I love this.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have a community, which is why. Like, I didn't have friends in comedy. I was dating someone at the time, and it was great. Like, we had a very nice relationship. So it was like, I did an open mic. Why would I get dinner with these people I don't know who are, like, going to be on the whole time? Or I could go home and see my girlfriend who I haven't seen.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was like, oh, I'll just do that. And so, like... That was all fine, but it ended. The result was that I was in comedy for years with no friends in comedy.
And it's such a difference. Sorry, I'm.
Yeah, no, you're right.
No, I was just gonna say it's like just because like one of my goals last year, everyone's like you should have goals, but like one of the things I wanted was like I wanted friends, and it's made such a difference. Like when I go to see you at a mic, I'm instantly like, all right, Brian's here.
Yeah, same.
I can like, oh, dude, that means so much. So literally, because I'm like, oh,
well,
I think you hate me.
I have a question.
Anyway, what was your question?
So I have, remind me of that question in a second, but, and to me what's tough about it is like, oh, should I be trying to set up a hang? Should I be writing? Like all those things. But when you're hungover COVID, you always have those jobs you can and should be doing. But my question to you was, and I'm not trying to butter your bread, my friend, but do you, it's a two-parter. Are you aware of your sort of like reputation of like one of the kindest people in comedy?
Oh, that's really nice.
And how do you feel about that as your reputation?
Oh man, that's really really nice. Here's my thing. I've heard that from
everyone?
No, here's my thing with it. Honestly is like this is so fucking hard.
Yeah.
It's miserable and I suffer from depression, anxiety, and my biggest thing, I think they did this in, like, Ted Lasso, you know, not to, like, copy from there, but, like, I don't want anyone to ever feel that way, so I do my best to be kind to people, because it's also just the easiest thing you can do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's all, but I will say there is a part of me that when I go home, I am kind of like a curmudgeon sometimes.
Really?
Where it's like, oh, 100%, dude. And my poor fiance puts up with me when I have those bad days, and I get angry and whatever, so I just, you know, she's always there for me, which I'm really blessed
about.
So is
she surprised when people say that you, how kind you are?
She's definitely not surprised. But she does recognize that like there is this, part of me that like there, cause it's like the flip side of the same coin, right? Where it's like, I am that way because I suffer from a lot of like internal problems and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So one, it's like, it's so nice to hear that because I really do try to be kind and to, you know, to just, and I try to fucking beef people up, man.
Right.
Because you know
too.
What? Yeah. Because it's just like, this is so hard. It's the hardest thing to do. And I just know that like me, so many of us go home and when we're alone, we're like, the fuck am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, I suck. I'm whatever. I'm like the worst self-deprecating. Going back to that. I do all of that internally, and I don't want anyone to ever feel that way.
Right.
So I really appreciate you saying that because I do work hard to be, to, I don't want to say I work hard at it, but I do make a genuine effort to be nice to people and to always do that.
Yeah. I mean, I at a mic, well, I have a couple things. Well, at a mic a few weeks ago, you had to come out and tell us the mic was canceled.
Oh,
and
God.
Everyone leaving was like, literally was like, oh, at least we got to see Matt.
Oh, that's
that
so
brightened my day.
Oh,
seeing
that's
Matt,
so
which
nice.
Is like, there's so few people in comedy that would have gotten that reaction of like, oh, we just got news that was annoying. I mean, it wasn't terrible news, but it's annoying news.
Yeah.
But hey, we all got to see, and it was, and everyone was like, oh, well, we got to see Matt. That's
well,
nice.
It is, and it's real funny because like in the same way, I was like looking at the crowd. I was like, oh, yeah. Brian's here with like a DTS Shankar. Who's another wonderful comedian you guys should follow. That really made my night, dude. I really appreciate you saying that.
Oh.
What else you got for me? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I always try to, I do also try to beef people up. And because sometimes they give it right back to you, and that's a little, so when you say something nice, sometimes they say you too.
Oh, dude, you know what? Oh, dude, oh, and doesn't that, oh, that kills me. Yeah, it's great. Especially if you say good set, like if someone like it, and they're like, yeah, you too. I'm like, one of the funniest things, Sam Frank, who's another fantastic comedian, texted me. I gave him a compliment because I had read like one of the poems he's published.
Yeah.
And like I had read one of them and it was fantastic. And he goes, thanks, man. That means a lot. I'd give you a compliment right back, but I'm afraid you're going to think I'm not going to mean it. So I'm going to wait 2 weeks.
That's a funny bit. I like that. Yeah.
So it's pretty good.
That's funny.
Dude, no, I really appreciate I appreciate you saying that, dude. That really means a lot.
It's the truth.
There was a question I was going to
remember. No, I was going to, there was a point. Sorry. The two-parter, which you kind of answered, was your reputation as the kindest man in comedy. And like, your answer is no, I think, but do you wish you had a different reputation? Like, wish that when your name comes up, everyone was like, that's the funniest guy. That guy kills every room. People do say you're funny, but it's like, do you wish they said that? Or do you wish they said, or are you happy on some level or satisfied on some level that it is universally the kindest man in comedy?
You know, that's a really great question.
Thank you.
Here's the reason I'm okay with it right now is this is my fourth full year doing comedy, full disclosure. I know I'm going to get better. I know I'm not at my full potential. If I was at my full potential and people were saying he's really nice and not like he's really funny, that would bother me. But I know I've still got a lot of growing to do. I've got a lot of stuff I want to do. And my biggest thing has always been just like, I want to do good work and I want that to be like what I'm known for.
Mm-hmm.
And I just know that my best work isn't out there yet. So I'm okay with it at this
stage.
All
right.
Yeah. So
and
I think,
people want to be around kind people and they want to be around people that are building them up and they want to be around people who are making them feel good rather than someone who is like a jerk, but you know, whatever.
Dude, 100%. And it's just like, you know, like, the biggest thing I try to remember too is like everyone's on their own journey in this. You know, that's what I've been trying to stick with lately is because I found like a lot of times I get like very envious of, I've spent too much time on social media. So
everyone
I'm like,
does,
So I'm looking who's passed at this club, who's doing whatever, who's on the road doing stuff. And what I try to do now, I keep a little wins log. I keep my small wins. Like I was very fortunate. I just did the road with Gabe Malika. That was a huge milestone for me.
That's
first
awesome.
Time I did the road. So I was like, I wrote that in there. If I try a new joke at a mic, write that in there. You know, so I try to focus on that rather than the other people kind of stuff. And that's just really nice.
When you did the road with Gabe, did you guys both make jokes that you look very similar?
Yes, we do. We always, when Gabe and I ever do a show together, we always bring it up.
You would have to.
We have to. And sometimes what's funny is like I opened for him at Soho Playhouse one time and I had a joke ready in the tank that was like, I'm here because I want a Gabe Malika lookalike contest, a little short opener.
Yeah.
And like Gabe said something like to that effect, but better.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn it, I got to open with something else. So I had to like write something quick backstage. Yeah, it is crazy how similar we do look alike. And what's funny is like we got into the comedy for the same reason, which is that we both saw Mike Birbiglia's My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, and that's like what made us want to do this.
Oh, really?
See, we have like the same origin story.
I don't
nice
know
too.
The Birbiglia back catalog. Or not back catalog. I don't know the catalog. I know him a little bit.
We spoke about Bruce. We're about to talk about Bruce.
Let's do it. So why should I watch?
My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, dude. It's my one of my favorite things is like, and there's a comedian who actually pointed this out to me because I listed my three favorite comedians. And my top three, it's Birbiglia, Holmes, Pete Holmes, and Gary Goldman. They're my top three. I got to ask you, though, quick.
All right.
Who are your top three?
Of all time?
Yeah.
George Carlin.
Oh, nice.
Louis. And maybe Goldman, maybe Seinfeld.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say Goldman over Seinfeld.
I know you mentioned Seinfeld the show. I'm a big fan of Seinfeld as well, which I'm sure we'll get more into off mic because we could go four more hours about it.
Let's do it. Let's chop it up into something an hour long. I got nowhere to be.
Dude, I love it. We do have to be out of here by 10, though.
Oh, what time is it now?
What are we looking at? 9:30.
Oh, yeah. Wow. We're cruising.
But you have school tomorrow too, right?
Who gives
a shit? Oh, you're the best.
What am I doing tomorrow? Second period, we're playing the second period is an easy lesson. So
nice.
And I'm all first period. So.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
Do you get to come in later because of that?
Yeah. Yes and no. Like, I come in. I'm supposed to be there at 8:15. I usually get there around whatever time I lied about getting there earlier in the show. But I get there before first period starts, but I can get there, like, right at the last second.
Gotcha.
As opposed to if you're teaching, you got to get there early, make your copies, do all your stuff.
Right,
you know?
And that's, what a great perk.
Oh, big time.
Do you have that every year or this
is
your first year?
No, this year. But I do make the schedules, so.
We'll you make the schedule? Oh, that's
I'm
power.
On the team that makes the schedules, yeah.
Oh, my God. You have any input? Is Margaret on that team?
No, I wish. Oh, my. Be still my heart.
Oh my God, what were we talking about? Oh, comedians.
Yeah, Birbiglia. Yeah. And
so
someone
pointed this out to me, which is that and it's true, I am a big fan of like vulnerable comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, when I watched it in middle school, and it's a story about how he met his wife. And it is this incredible journey that he takes you on. First of all, he's a storyteller like no one I've ever seen on stage. And what connects you with him is like, I'm trying to find like the right words to describe this, but you just become so enveloped in the story and the way he tells it, and his sense of humor is so distinct and his style. I know I'm not saying much, but I can't believe you've never seen My Girlfriend's Boyfriend.
Yeah, I never seen that one.
Dude, you gotta.
Where can I watch it now?
It's on Netflix.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah, so I think his whole catalog is actually on Netflix.
Because someone told me the other day that I would like him if I got into him more, and they said that I could sort of. Yeah, they were saying that I should watch more of his stuff.
Well, actually, in the same way like that you talked about Bruce, like he does bring up these like universal themes. He talks about death and the old man in the pool. He talks about, you know, love, having a kid, and like all these sort of like universal themes. And, I mean, one, he's just so funny. That's the top thing. And, yeah, I get, like, I'm speechless just thinking about it.
Yeah.
I wish I could be more articulate in this moment.
No, no worries.
Recommending him to you.
But I like vulnerable comedy, certainly, also. And I like any stuff that's vulnerable and is unique. But I guess I'm not trying to shit on him because I don't know him well enough to do it, but. My fear with him, I think the reason I haven't watched as much is because I worry that it's going to be vulnerable vulnerable for the sake of being vulnerable.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I like, I think that sometimes nowadays in all facets of life, people will allow setbacks and trauma, like you said, to sort of define them in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't need to. You know what I mean? It's like, it's like, okay, if you're a comedian and you're going to tell me about the time something terrible happened to you.
Yeah.
I'm here for it, but you need to give me something too. You know what I mean? You need to either make me laugh do I care about this?
No, 100%. And I agree with you. He definitely does that in the special. 100%. But I do. And I'm actually glad you're bringing this up because that's something I'm actively checking myself on the show I'm working on. Cause there's a lot of like tough, dark stuff.
Yeah.
But your job at the end of the day as a comedian is to make it funny.
Right.
And that is something that I do think is kind of lost now in a certain sense.
Yeah, it can be funny. It doesn't have to be the funniest thing. I think it doesn't have to be the funniest thing, but the audience should leave with a sense of, I get why you told me that.
Yes.
Right?
100%.
Like, who gives a shit? Like, this is why I give a shit, right?
And that's maybe a better way to say it in that you should – Like, you should be telling this with the intent of having an intended impact on the audience.
Right.
Right? You should know what you want from the audience when you're saying it. And to your point, I think a lot of comics just go up and just kind of trauma dump.
Mm-hmm.
You know what
Certainly.
I mean? Which is like, you know, again, it's an art. So it's, you know, it's, I get that it's self-expression, but like, you do, I think you owe that to the audience who is a lot of times paying to come see you. Right. So, and that's the point, is like, you want to feel connected in that audience.
Right.
And I think that intention is important, because then you're connecting with them in the way that you intended to, if that makes sense.
Right.
I know I said intended a lot, but.
And that is what I, when I think about even the stories I was telling you, and I don't mind telling, you know, whatever, I texted you a bunch of the low points, right? And I
just, there were a lot. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I mean we've all had many low points, and
course.
I don't mind talking about any of them. I in fact like it, if for no other reason than, like, even if a student of mine were to hear that once in college I got too drunk and peed on my friend's floor, it's like, yeah, that doesn't mean you should do it. Like, I'm telling you about,
yeah.
You know, but I'm just saying, I don't mind sharing the vulnerable stories, but there needs to be, just because, I don't know, I'm just repeating myself, but that's, I think, sometimes why I maybe pull back from some of that stuff is,
yeah,
because it's like, yeah, no, I have done stuff that I'm not proud of, or I have stuff where I don't mind being vulnerable about my relationships with people in my family or whatever, but I'm not going to necessarily tell you unless there is a reason.
100%. You know? Like, is it for me or is it for the audience?
Right, exactly.
Which I think is, yeah. No, and that makes so much sense to me. And also, what a beautiful gift as a teacher that you are giving now, which is that you're literally telling students, if you're listening to this, it's like, yeah, I'm not proud of that, and I'm a flawed person.
Right.
Because so many times we look up to, like, our quote-unquote role models, our teachers, our parents, and stuff like that, and we think they're perfect, they live perfect lives.
Right.
And they haven't. And
right.
That's okay. Like, and that's, when you, I think when you realize that too, that it's okay to not be, right? It's okay to be okay.
Right.
I know in a different sense,
yeah,
than what we said, but that's, I think that's so important.
Yeah. And I think tomorrow maybe I'll open my class with, hey guys, we're going to talk about triangles in a second, but it's important for you to know, hey, it's important for you to know that once I drank too many PBRs and peed on my friend's floor. Okay? So you too can pee on a floor your freshman year of college and then eventually teach geometry, if that's your dream.
Brian, we always end by asking someone who's been through your situation before, and I know we talked a little bit about, mm-hmm, some different low points, but let's do the friends first, where if someone finds themselves in a similar situation where they see a group of friends from high school that they thought were friends and they're out with other people, like, what would you say to someone?
I would say to them the same. I this is advice I give to teachers all the time, about, like, new teachers, where they're like,
sure,
what do I do? Is it's like, beat the kids. No, the advice I give is everything that happens, like every action that another person takes, almost universally says more about them than it does about you, right? That's 100% true when you start teaching, right? Kids are going to be crazy, and kids could come in and be crazy because you're, like, they could come in and be crazy because they had a bad day that morning and they had a fight with a family member or a boyfriend, girlfriend, or,
yeah,
whatever. They could come in and they could just be in a terrible mood and get set off by something you said or whatever, or set off by something else that's going on in their life. And that doesn't mean that it was your fault that there was, like, something bad in your classroom, right? What it means, your job is to basically create circumstances that mitigate those things from happening, right? If you're creating lessons, for example, that are fun and engaging and you have a decent management of your classroom, those things will happen less often,
mm-hmm,
right? I think the same thing is true about oftentimes a friend being a jerk, right? Or a friend, not that those people were even jerks in that story, but friends doing anything. It's like, for the most part, it will say more about them than it will about you and your job. Like, I guess what in that situation, your job is to keep that in mind and to sort of act accordingly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they weren't, I still don't think that they weren't doing anything to me.
Yeah.
They were going to see their other friend who went to BU. They didn't tell me. It hurt my feelings.
Sure.
But they weren't trying to do that. They were trying to hang out with another person.
Which
and
is,
in some ways, that rejection or any rejection is a gift of in a sense. Because,
oh,
you'd rather be around people that want you around than people who are tolerating you.
That's beautiful. And that's, like, that's exactly right. And I think about, like, cause some of the rejections that come to mind are like, and it's true. It's just at the end of the day, you want to be around people that you want to be with.
So yeah.
I could not have said that better. And then for anyone that's peed on a floor,
No. Apologize a lot and then try to be best friends with everyone for the rest of your life. That is, if you can be best friends with everyone that was in the room for the rest of your life, it will both lead to some of the best friendships you've ever had and on some level absolve you of some of the guilt that you felt. You need to officiate one person's wedding that was there. That's the only way you can cleanse your conscience if you pee on a floor, is the person that you pee next to, you need to officiate their wedding. And if you don't do that, then you can go fuck yourself. But yeah, that's like Hammurabi's code. That's the Hammurabi's code punishment for peeing on a floor. No, but also I would say like the best way to do after is to avoid it by not drinking too much, mixing in some waters and learning about the dangers of alcohol in health class when they're trying to teach you the first time. Cause those people aren't just, you know, they aren't just old bags trying to give you some bad lessons. They're wise people.
Do you ever teach anything like that at the school?
Like not in an official curriculum. Oh, I've talked to kids before who are like high or who have told me that they've, like seniors more often, who will like tell me they drank over a weekend or something like that. And okay. I will like talk to them about like how to stay, you know, making sure that they're safe.
Yeah.
Right. And like how to not do it when they're in high school because their brain is still developing, and how to make sure that they're staying safe and making good choices and whatever. Gotcha. And so I've talked to kids about that.
Gotcha. So more in like an informal capacity.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, we talked about AP stats before.
Yeah.
Last year, there was a problem on the AP stats exam a few years ago, binge drinking. And okay. I heard some of my kids jokingly said, like, I can't wait to get to college and binge drink. And
Ooh.
They're joking.
Yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
It is also like, I could see their future in their eyes of being like, these were, I was going to say nerdy kids. I don't mean that as an insult. They were in AP. They were great kids. I liked them a lot. But I could see the whole thing happening. I could see, oh, they don't know what they're in for.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know, and I was like, oh, let's talk about ways to make sure that doesn't happen.
So that started like a conversation with the kids?
Yeah.
Wow. That's incredible,
and
Brian.
And I won't. Oh, thank you. I won't be 100% honest with them, but like, this is exactly what I did.
Sure.
But I will tell them, like, I've made mistakes.
Yeah.
In that aspect of my life. And here's what you should try to do to avoid those mistakes from happening for yourself.
That's such a wonderful teacher, Brian.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome, my friend. Oh. Brian, tell the people where they can find you.
You can find me, this camera or this camera over here? Oh, that's
you're,
that.
You're this one here.
You can find me on Instagram at Brian Elberg. It's just my name, no stage name. It's Brian Elberg, Elberg. And then if you find me there, that's kind of all you need, the only thing you need to do right now. And then I
like,
post shows and whatnot. On there, and hopefully have some more coming up soon. So.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. Dude, this was awesome. Thank
dude,
you so
it was
much.
Awesome. Thank we did an hour 45. Right?
I know, dude. That's awesome.
Pretty good.
Hell yeah.
Pretty good.
We're going You Made It Weird style with Pete Holmes, where it's like, we're not editing, we're just putting it out.
Yeah, feel free.
Dude, I love it. That's
there
awesome.
You go. All
Ryan Elberg, thank you so much.
Thank you, man. You're the best. Dude. Kindest man in comedy.
Oh my God. And I'm just, I'm awkwardly good now. Yeah. And here's to hoping we left you a little higher. All right, man. We did it.
We did.